We're back with Teacher Talk, sponsored by the Columbus Education Association, who is solely responsible for the views expressed. I'm Sue Mizziak, your host. The members of the Columbus Education Association wear two hats. We're supporters of the community in which we work, and we are also professional educators who strive to improve the academic achievement of our students. So on tonight's program, we'll look at CEA's involvement with the United Way. Then we'll talk about our responsibility as teachers to continually improve our own teaching methods in order to help our students succeed academically. I'm very pleased that Phil Hayes, Vice President of the Columbus Education Association, has taken the time to join me on Teacher Talk to discuss our United Way partnership and professional development for teachers. Welcome to Teacher Talk, Phil.
Oh, thank you for having me again, Sue.
I know. It's always great having you here. I think the first time you were on the program, you were a teacher and not Vice President of CEA. And certainly you've been an activist on many levels, and here you are as Vice President. We met last June and talked about your new role in the district and with the union. And so how's it been going?
It's been great. It's been a wealth of experiences, and luckily there's a wonderful team at the office. Rhonda is president, Tracy Johnson, Bob Hearn, Isetta Murray, Rick Logan, and Carol Wagner. Just a phenomenal team to work with and to learn from and to do good things for the teachers and the students of Columbus.
Right, and you get to really learn more about the total Columbus City School population as Vice President, because you get to go to different schools and meet with teachers you didn't know before.
Oh, yeah. I've been to, I can't even remember how many schools now, just since the beginning of the school year, but to see how teachers work with the different populations in Columbus and the different methods of doing things all across the district. I'm a high school teacher, mm-hmm. So primarily my experience is high school, but to walk into an elementary school and to see the first and second graders and pre-K and special needs pre-K and have that experience to see what it is our folks do on a daily basis, it all corners of the district, is truly amazing and gratifying and worthwhile.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I know just having guests on this program and talking with teachers throughout the district who are doing who are in a variety of roles with a variety of students, as you've already mentioned, I am always so humbled by the wealth of experience, but also by the innovation, the dedication that we see with Columbus City School teachers. And I'm sure you've had a few surprises yourself. And as you said, it's been kind of amazing to see what they do.
Yes, it's mm-hmm. it's just the wealth of different programs and just everything that folks do, it's for the students. So that's refreshing to see and just great to be a part of.
It is. Well, now, Phil, you know, you were a teacher for many years before you were elected to become vice president of the Columbus Education Association. One of the things we want to talk about here today is the role of the United Way in Columbus City Schools. And I'm sure as a teacher, you might have had some awareness of the work of United Way in the lives of your students or in the lives of the community. Can you kind of speak to that a little bit as to any awareness that you had of the role that they played with our community?
Well, the United Way is one of several charitable campaigns that CEA conducts. United Way, United Negro College Fund, also the Making Strides event. CEA has a dream team. So we're very involved in the community. United Way has been a partner of CEA for many, many years. And so up until recently, Rhonda Johnson was the president of CEA, was actually on the board. So from a teacher's perspective, the United Way campaign is done every year in the fall, most often in October, during the month of October, in our first legislative assembly, which is the second legislative assembly in October, is the kickoff for the United Way campaign, and that's where we get our teachers and the administrators there, and so just to give them the instructions on how to kick off the campaign. We are fortunate this year to have Dr. Jean mm-hmm. Harris kick it off with Janet Jackson, who's the president and CEO of United Way for Central Ohio. know. And so as a teacher, you know, that was something that we would do every year. And so I would contribute. And then becoming a faculty rep, we run the campaign. It actually says in our contract that we run these charitable campaigns, that we're responsible for that. And so now overseeing being a co-chair of the campaign has been a wonderful opportunity for me.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, we're in partnership with United Way. They certainly have been a presence in our community, helping the students and the families of our students. Phil, do you know, because there are various agencies that the United Way supports, do you have any idea which ones have a direct impact on the students who go to the Columbus City Schools?
I would venture to say that just about every agency has a direct impact on our students, because mm-hmm. we can never do too much to help them. In fact, one of the bold goals for United Way is education. And so they've been working towards this bold goal for a number of years now. And so we're happy to be in partnership with them and to give them the ability through the resources that we're able to collect and contribute to them to continue their work on this.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at agencies who probably help our students in some cases, maybe with clothing or referrals for medical. I mean, what are some of those things that United Way does to really help our students who live in our community?
United Way helps to ensure that our students and their families have a place to sleep, food to eat, help them get employment, medical care. It's a variety of services that they offer. So to say that, you know, it's not just buying backpacks or pencils. It's taking care of the needs of the whole child and their family and their relatives as well, so that they can come to school focused and ready to learn.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, that you're co-chair of the United Way campaign for the Columbus Education Association. How did we do this year in terms of fundraising? I know that there have been years where fundraising has been very high, and other years where we may not have reached the same goals because of the economy, because of people's own situations, maybe individuals who in the past contributed to United Way couldn't do so much this year because they themselves are hurting a bit financially. So how did that work this year in terms of what Columbus teachers contributed, even if you don't have a specific dollar amount, but how did we do? And also, I think that there are also sometimes some incentives for teachers to contribute to the United Way?
Well, I can tell you that last year we contributed well over 300,000. It's not just teachers, it's
right.
also administrators,
mm-hmm.
our classified folks, our classified supervisors. And one of the great things about the campaign is that it is a partnership with not only the teachers, but the administrators, the classified employees, and classified supervisors.
We're all working together.
We're all working together. We are. We're there for our students in more ways than one. So last year, I do believe it was over $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so the jury's still out for right now, because we're still in the process of finalizing the campaign and getting the envelopes back. But I hope that we will have exceeded what we were able to collect last year.
That's a huge amount of money. Now, as I understand, quite often when you have a certain percentage of teachers in a building who contribute to the United Way, the name of that building is published in The Voice, which is the teacher's newsletter, and they're really given attaboys or pats on the back for really supporting this fine organization.
Yes, we're actually going to be giving awards to the schools and the work locations with the highest per capita percentage giving. We had an early bird winner for a prize drawing. And that's Breakfast with Dr. Harris and Rhonda Johnson.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yes. Now, the bad news is that it's going to be really early in the morning, but that's
because
it was Mifflin High School. And so we start at the high school level. Teachers report at 7:15. Many are there earlier. I was in my classroom usually 6 in the morning every
uh-huh.
day. And so there's that. There's also a prize drawing based on your level of giving. And so we just drew for the prize drawing, and those are going to be coming in, and those names will be in an upcoming edition of The Voice. So we'll be notifying those folks soon. So, and we're also going to have a event for those individuals that gave more than $500 this year to the United Way. It's a leadership event that'll be held at the Capitol Club later in December.
Wonderful, wonderful. So incentives all around, but the real winners are those individuals who benefit from our United Way contributions, our children and their families, and we're certainly glad that we can all work together as a community. Phil, you made mention of a couple of other types of community support that CEA contributes to. One was Making Strides. Why don't you mention again one or two of those and tell us just a little bit about them?
Well, Making Strides is the annual walk, and it's in October of every year. Azetta Murray is the staff consultant who handles that, and we're one of the co-sponsors of the event, and we always have a great showing.
And that's for breast cancer.
And that's for breast cancer awareness, yes. And also the United Negro College Fund, which is done in the spring of each year. And Azetta is also in charge of that. So those are just several great campaigns that we run, charitable campaigns that benefit our community, our students, and their families as well.
Right, and that's so important to show that we're not just in a building where students come to learn, but we are also members of the community, and we want to make sure that our community gets the support that it needs. Well, now, another way that deserving children are helped is through the CEA member scholarships, and this is a little different than what we've just been talking about. Tell me about these awards and who gets them and what kind of awards they are, Phil.
Well, they are open to members who have a student in their senior year of college. What they have to do is they have to apply, send the transcripts in, and if their child is selected, they'll receive a $750 a check to put towards the final year of their senior year in college. We had quite a few last year, and I know that we're going to have quite a few this year as well.
Well, now, what determines that? I can remember, of course, I go way back, but I can remember years ago where only like maybe two or three students at the most were ever selected, and I know that that has changed. So what determines whether or not a student gets this scholarship, and how many students are we looking at approximately?
Well, you know, I don't know the exact number, but I can tell you that we do have a larger amount that's given, a larger dollar amount to a fewer number of students in the awards and retirement banquet in the spring in May.
Right.
But the member scholarship, I believe we had at least 50 last year. We may have more. And so this is something that we're able to do for our members. It's just one of the benefits of being a member of the Columbus Education
Association. Is this based on the students' grades, or do activities come into this? Are we looking at need, or is it just because they are members?
First qualification, good question. First qualification is that their parent is a member of the Columbus Education Association. There is a 2.0 GPA as well, and they have to provide the necessary transcripts and all that information. And then from there, the committee makes the decisions based on the documentation that's provided. If there are additional questions, the committee will follow up, and then the Board of Governors will get a report from the committee based on the number of folks that are qualifying for that. So.
You know, I really like this, Phil, because we are looking at educators whose dues, so to speak, are helping to further the education of their own children. That they, you know, the teachers in the Columbus City Schools, of course, value education. That's what they're all about. That's what they work so hard to do, is to help our community members, you know, improve their lot through education. But they're also helping their own children then to continue in education, setting a great example. Well, now, speaking about education, it's not only our students who get educated, but also we know that teachers have to be, to use a kind of tired old phrase, but it's true, teachers have to be lifelong learners. Education is not static. What we teach our students is not static. It's all constantly evolving. And so what teachers know, what they do, the techniques and strategies that they use, those also have to evolve to more or less suit the learning styles of our population. So, Phil, the Columbus City Schools and the Columbus Education both support the Professional Learning Communities, or PLCs, initiative. And I read on the website for the PLCs that the overreaching principle is that the path to improving student learning lies in providing continuous team-based job-embedded learning for educators, for their teachers. So our kids are going to improve, our students are going to improve their learning when we have teachers who are better educated, whose education is always keeping up with the times, with the trends. So can you just give me now a little more insight into what are the PLCs and who are the participants?
Well, the PLC, it's part of the whole alphabet soup concoction of all the acronymic world we live in. PLCs being the professional learning communities. And it's the expectation of the district that every member of the, every employee is on a PLC.
So every employee.
Yeah. And so the association.
Now, are we talking about the custodians? Are we talking about the educational employees?
Every employee of the district.
Got it.
So, yeah. So it's a big thing, but it's a very important thing. And CA supports it wholeheartedly. And really what it is about 5 to 6 folks coming together, and there's no wrong way for educators to organize themselves into a PLC. Perhaps it's all of the first grade teachers in a building, or perhaps it's all of the primary teachers in an elementary school, or all of the English teachers in a junior high or a middle school or a high school. So there's no wrong way to organize it. And then job embedded refers to the fact that it's really supposed to happen during the work day. So it's not a situation where you come in early to work on it, or you go out somewhere to have dinner and then do your PLC. It's perfect and purest form. It's about using the time during the workday when you don't have students, and for the administration to work with the teachers to set aside common planning time so the folks can sit down and have their PLC meetings. And basically, it's looking at student achievement. And PLC is a journey. It's not a destination.
Right.
It's about looking at the students that we serve. It's about looking at what we can do to increase their student achievement and setting a few reasonable goals, a few measurable goals that you address in your PLCs. And so it's kind of, you know, lighting the candle and planting the seed so that we can learn from each other. Because like you said, as teachers, we're lifelong learners. And who better to learn from than not only our students, but our colleagues as well.
Right, right. So we can learn from each other, but we can also help each other.
Yes.
Through certain, through certain problems perhaps, or maybe through new content that's come in. I would think that especially a lot of times there would be issues having to do with technology, where maybe people have technology, but they want to learn to use it more effectively. And it seems like that could be a good area for a PLC, where people get together who want to improve what they're doing, who want to maybe embed it more in their practice. But what about some of these issues? What kinds of issues are they addressing, some of these PLCs? Because I know that this directly impacts on what happens with our professional development days. So what are some of the issues that people are looking at? You mentioned, well, maybe a bunch of first grade teachers would be a PLC. What kinds of things would they maybe look at, or that group of high school English teachers?
Well, it's what's important to remember is that it's data driven. So it's looking at data. Perhaps they're picking out something about the, attendance, or how their students are testing during the progress monitoring period, or the DIBLS, the DIBLS test is something we use at the beginning of the year to determine where the students are in terms of reading at the elementary level. With the third grade guarantee now, we use that to identify the students that will have reading plans under the third grade guarantee. Mm-hmm. But it could be looking at data for that. It could be looking at attendance data, past scores. Also, you can develop common assessments and work together to develop these common assessments. And for example, an English team or a grade level team, these common assessments coming together, you know, so their students are getting the same consistent assessments in each class. Maybe it's not necessarily the same questions, but the focus of the assessments could be the same.
So this could even involve looking at common writing rubrics.
Yes, that's a great example of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I know that your particular area of expertise is social studies, various areas of whether it's history or any area of social studies. So if you were involved in a PLC, what might be some of the types of things you'd be looking at there, especially if you're in with a group of other social studies teachers?
Well, you know, one of the things that I'd want to focus on is literacy, because what I did was I tried to figure out some kind of predictor for my students at Brookhaven, whether or not they'd pass the social studies OGT. And I looked through all these different variables on our data system. And the one thing I found was that if they passed the 8th grade Ohio achievement assessments with a 400 more, there was like an 80% chance or better that they would pass the OGT in social studies.
Okay.
And it's really a reading test. So I'd focus on literacy and strategies for increasing student literacy.
Ah, good, good. And I'm sure there are other individuals who feel the same way. I know that's something that people don't always understand, but I remember when I taught ACT prep, and one of the things that students would say to me is, oh, I don't know enough science, I'm not going to do well on this. And I said, no, you need to focus on your literacy skills, because mm-hmm. the science test is really a test of how well you read the scientific data and the paragraphs relating to science. Well, that's very, very interesting. One last question about the PLCs, Phil. Could an entire school be a single PLC? In other words, like, let's say this school says, okay, we have a major problem in some area, or we have maybe not a problem, but we have some area in which improvement across the board is needed. Does that kind of thing ever happen?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm not sure if that's mm-hmm. happening currently. I can tell you that PLCs are best organized with five or six folks. Mm-hmm. So a school has to identify SMART goals, and perhaps as the school, identify a couple goals that they wanted each PLC to take ownership of. And then if the PLCs wanted to do that, they could. But for a PLC to be truly effective, it really should be about five or six folks, five
okay.
or six people.
All right. And very quickly, this year's Professional Development Days, when do they take place and what is their value to the staff?
Oh, they're of great value. We have 3 days of non-student attendance. They're all on Wednesdays this year. There's we just had one last week. There's one in December, and I believe there's one in January. Mm-hmm. And this year, as in last year, they're meeting by the high school feeder patterns because we're aligned into our feeder patterns. And the best thing about the professional development is it was co-constructed with us and the district, in that this year, for the first time in I don't know how long or ever, we're actually having our own folks be the facilitators for the professional development. In years past, we've had folks come in from outside of the district, and teachers are a really tough audience. And if they don't think that they connect with you, or if
they
you're not
authentic.
A teacher, they're right. Yeah, if there's not that authentic connection, that won't happen. So we've got our own colleagues leading the professional development. And from what I've heard, that has gone very well, especially on that first day. So we've got two more coming up.
All right, great. And I know that the teachers really find those to be valuable. Well, Phil, you know, we've been talking about how the CEA has certainly been a part not only of the community and working through forums such as United Way, but also striving to improve teachers' practice so that student learning will improve. So how do you respond to charges that teachers' unions stifle educational process? I mean, there seems to be some bit of a backlash against unions in general. What do teachers' unions do for the well-being of our students and the rights of our teachers? Very briefly, please.
Well, the Columbus Education Association is focused on teacher quality. It's like that old car commercial, quality is job one.
Yeah.
Well, teacher quality is job one, and that's extremely important. And by having experienced, competent, caring professionals in the classroom, it allows our students to succeed and allows them to reap the benefits of the education that they receive, whether it's going off to a two-year college, a four-year college, or entering the workforce right after graduating from high school. So what teachers unions, the Columbus Education Association teachers unions do, is they make sure that the teachers are able to teach the students that they have. And it's the teachers' working conditions, the teachers' teaching conditions, are the students' learning conditions. And that's really important because we need to take care of our students.
You know, that's a really good point you make, that the teachers' working conditions are the students' learning conditions. And so when teachers are in negotiations, when the teachers' union is in negotiations for, you know, let's make sure we have the best surroundings possible in terms of working conditions, we're looking at, we want the best surroundings possible in terms of learning conditions. I really like that comparison there, Phil. Well, we know that the CEA is very important to all of us, to our students, to the community, and certainly to this program because they're the sponsor of Teacher Talk. Hey, we're out of time now, Phil, and I want to thank you so much for appearing on Teacher Talk. Once again, it's been a pleasure, and you always bring so much to the table, so thank you for appearing.
Thank you for having me again. I love it.
Okay, great. Well, this concludes our program. Please join me on Teacher Talk the first and third Tuesdays of each month. This is Sue Miziak saying good night.